From the studios at WMFE in Orlando, Florida, this is the Space Exploration Podcast that asks the question, are we there yet? Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. The Cassini spacecraft has been exploring Saturn since launching in 1997. Now, Cassini gave planetary scientists incredible insight into the planet's rings, its surface, and the moons. And Cassini hit pop culture, too. It got a nod, albeit with a bit of snark, on Comedy Central's The Daily Show.
As for Saturn's rings, the probe last week transmitted these color-enhanced photographs, revealing they're mostly made of ice, but also another material mission scientists have labeled, quote, dirt. That's right. Saturn's rings are made of dirt. $3 billion, folks. Billion with a B for dirt.
University of Central Florida professor and planetary scientist Josh Caldwell says there's more than dirt in the data coming from Cassini. He's been working on the spacecraft since he started his career as a planetary scientist, and Caldwell's research interest includes studying the rings of Saturn. I met him at his office at the University of Central Florida to talk about Cassini, the rings, and how understanding Saturn gives us a glimpse of the dawn of our solar system. Caldwell takes us back to the start of that historic mission.
October 15th, 1997 was the launch, and the at the time, Cassini is what they called a flagship mission. We were talking about the Europa mission as sort of the next NASA flagship planetary mission. And as a flagship mission, it had very, very broad scientific goals. Lots of NASA missions have fairly focused science goals, like go get a piece of an asteroid and bring it back, or help us understand the evolution of a certain aspect of Mars's atmosphere. Cassini's goal was to really try to explore in depth every aspect of the Saturn system, the planet, its atmosphere, its magnetosphere, the rings, in particular the moon Titan, the largest moon at Saturn, which has a dense atmosphere and a climate system, and then the icy satellites as well. So there were five working groups established for each of these five science areas, which had equal emphasis in the project. So again, that's the planet, the magnetosphere, the rings, Titan, and then the other icy moons. So each of those was an equal pillar, basically, of the five science goals of the mission. And we had flown by Saturn with Voyagers 1 and 2, which was our sort of initial reconnaissance of the system, and now we were going to hang out there and do in-depth exploration.
How long were the Voyager spacecraft there?
They're flyby missions. So, it's a matter of a couple of days from sort of when you're, quote-unquote, in the system and, making observations of the system from afar for maybe a week or two inbound and outbound. So those are very short encounters, similar to the kind of encounter that New Horizons had at Pluto this last summer.
So this is the first in-depth study of Saturn.
First time we had spent time there with a spacecraft in orbit at the planet. And the spacecraft has succeeded, I think, beyond really anybody's expectations. It's been a remarkably healthy spacecraft. The instruments have been doing very well. The spacecraft has been doing very well. The initial mission, nominal mission, was just for 4 years. So it was supposed to end in the summer of 2008. And it's going to be going until the fall of 2017. So a very successful mission.
Now, I understand that you got your planetary science career started with Cassini. Can you kind of explain your role and how you got involved in this project?
My thesis advisor at the University of Colorado, Larry Esposito, successfully proposed to build one of the instruments on Cassini. So he's the principal investigator of the ultraviolet imaging spectrograph, which is one of the cameras on board. And he got the award to provide that instrument right around the time I got my PhD. And I had gotten some grants to continue working at Colorado, and I did my research with Voyager data on planetary rings, And so Larry immediately put me to work designing some planning software for Cassini. So as soon as I was out of graduate school, I started working on Cassini. And in those early days, the spacecraft didn't exist. It was just drawings. And in fact, the design of it changed dramatically over those first few years leading up to being built and launched in 97.
What were you specifically working on when you're doing the software? And what are some of the things that you wanted to find out about Saturn?
Well, we were trying to figure out what kinds of observations we need to make to learn as much as we can about the rings in particular was what my area was and my responsibility was. So I was designing software that would enable us to basically see what Saturn and the rings and the moons would look like from the point of view of the spacecraft. So this was software we would feed into the software trajectory for the spacecraft, and then you could visualize in a cartoon wireframe mode what the scene would look like and then plan observation sequences. We were also looking at what sort of capabilities our instrument would have that we were building there at Colorado. It had not yet been built, and we wanted to specify what its capabilities were. So we were exploring all the different kinds of observations we could make, and there are a number of them. We do imaging observations in the ultraviolet. I produced one of Cassini's most famous images, actually, which is a false color ultraviolet image of the rings that we produced right at the time Cassini arrived at Saturn. But we also make the highest resolution measurements of the rings in terms of their structure using a technique called a stellar occultation, where we look at the flickering of a star as it passes behind the rings. And there are lots of clever tricks that we could do with those kinds of measurements to tell us different things about the structure of the ring. So we were exploring over initially the 4 years of the planned nominal mission all of the different kinds of observations that we could make and trying to work out the best scenarios and planning.
So every time I come to your lab here, you're always working on something that has to do with the rings of Saturn. Kind of tell me why do you study the rings? Why are they so important to your research? And what has the Cassini spacecraft, what has it helped uncover when it comes to figuring out the rings of Saturn?
I'd say there's two ways understanding Saturn's rings are important. One is you're not doing a very good job of understanding the history and evolution of your solar system if you can't explain such a very prominent feature. They're striking. Through a small telescope, you can see Saturn's rings quite clearly. Why are they there? How long have they been there? How did they get there? How long are they going to last? These are pretty basic questions that we've still been struggling with. Cassini has given us a lot of information to help us understand the answers to those questions. We don't have definitive answers yet, but we're not sure yet whether the rings are relics from the origin of the solar system or whether they were created relatively recently, say within the last couple of hundred million years, by some catastrophic event like the disruption of a moon at Saturn. So the rings are tied into the overall history and evolution of the solar system. What sorts of roles big impacts played in the solar system, and the origin of moons. So that's one important aspect of the rings. Another is a more general issue, which is that the rings are kind of a nearby laboratory for the physics that takes place in a disk of particles. And a very interesting problem with particle disks that we're looking at these days is how do planetary systems in general form? Saturn's rings are sort of like a miniature early solar system. We've now discovered thousands of planets around other stars, so we know that planets are ubiquitous in the galaxy. But those planetary systems are very different, for the most part, than ours, so there's a wide variety of them. And we're still trying to understand how planets are formed, how planets like the Earth, where there's life, can form. And Saturn's rings provide us with a direct close-up view of some of the processes that take place in these particulate disks, which around other stars can lead to planets.
So going back to that first point, trying to figure out how the rings of Saturn got there, I mean, are scientists like you, are you all closer to finding an answer, or because of all of this new data you're getting, are you farther away?
It's funny. I think initially we were getting further away. The pre-Voyager view was that the rings were relics from the origin of the planets. And then Voyager showed lots of features in the rings that suggested that they were younger, more recent origin. And the initial results from Cassini supported that, but then also seemed to make it difficult to explain away that they could actually be youthful, have formed relatively recently. There's a lot of information coming from Cassini about different aspects of the rings, whether they are young, so they have certain features. They're very bright, for example, and they're sitting out in the solar system and where they're going to get polluted, basically, by meteoroids that hit them and darken them over time. It appears that just from their brightness alone, it looks like they're maybe only about 100 million years old. Our understanding of that age has varied over the course of the mission, but now it does seem pretty well locked into a younger age for the rings. But producing the rings recently is a difficult problem. You have to take a big chunk of mass, a relatively large moon, and break it up, or you have to capture a large comet, a large object from the outer solar system has to pass by Saturn in just the right way so that it breaks up and puts a lot of material into orbit around Saturn. And these are things that don't seem particularly likely to have occurred within the last 100 million years. We're actually going to be measuring at the end of the mission. Cassini is going to be going through a phase of orbits where it orbits in between the rings and the planet. Very exciting series of orbits called the proximal orbits. And in those orbits, by tracking the radio signal from the spacecraft, we'll be able to finally measure directly the total mass of the rings. Up to now, the mass of the rings is sort of lumped in with the mass of the planet, and we haven't been able to get a good handle on it. And by knowing the mass of the rings, that's going to really help us resolve the question of how easy or difficult is it to make the rings recently, and how easy or difficult is it for the rings to stick around for 4.5 billion years or not. So I think by the end of the mission, and after the data has been analyzed and models developed and studied, we'll have a much more solid picture on what the age and mode of origin of the rings are.
Do planetary scientists know what those particles are made of?
They're almost entirely water ice. So by looking at the spectrum of the light reflected from the rings, we can tell their composition pretty well, and they're, at least on the surface, very, very pure water ice with small amounts of contaminants. Those contaminants are silicates and maybe some iron and things like that. And the bulk measurements we get from some microwave measurements also seem to be primarily water ice. So they're fluffy snowballs.
Well, that fact just makes Saturn's rings, like, way more adorable now.
That's right, yes, yes. And they bump into each other very, very gently. The collision speeds between the ring particles are about a centimeter per second. So if you hold your fingers out a couple inches apart and take several seconds to bring them together, that's how fast the ring particles are bumping into each other. Very, very gentle collisions, but racing around Saturn at 10 or more kilometers per second, but bumping into each other very gently. And due to their proximity to Saturn, in spite of those gentle collisions, they have a hard time sticking together to make larger objects, which is why they remain as rings instead of growing together into a moon.
So talk to me a little bit about these close orbits that Cassini's going through right now. Are they actually going into the rings of Saturn?
They are crossing the ring plane in between the inner edge of the rings and the top of Saturn's atmosphere. There's a narrow region there, just a couple thousand kilometers thick, where we believe that the spacecraft will be safe, that it won't be running into any ring particles, and it'll just be skimming the cloud tops.
So on one side, there'll be Saturn. The other side, there'll be the rings.
That's right. So it's really threading the gap in between the planet and the rings. And it's doing that for two reasons. One is to be able to measure the gravity field of the planet and the rings very precisely. The closer you get, the more sensitive you are to small perturbations in the gravity. The other is that Cassini has to be disposed of at the end of its mission. And because Enceladus and Titan, two of Saturn's moons, have liquid water below their surfaces, they're potentially habitable worlds. And Cassini must not contaminate those worlds. So we need to make sure that we get rid of the spacecraft in a way that it doesn't ever in the future accidentally run into one of those potentially habitable worlds. So we're going to dump it into Saturn itself. So this final set of proximal orbits will end on September 15th of 2017 with Cassini crashing into Saturn.
Now, when do those first close orbits start?
We're in this. We just started within the last week or two a series of orbits called the F-ring orbits, which are close-in orbits that are just outside the F-ring of Saturn, which is sort of the outermost of the main rings.
So relatively soon then. Thinking back to the life of Cassini, what's been its impact on some of the research of Saturn, and what's been a big thing you find? Has there been a eureka moment within this mission?
I don't know if there's been a eureka moment for me in particular, but one of the most exciting things from my standpoint on the rings is that we actually see objects forming into larger objects within the rings, and then we see objects breaking apart. So we're seeing a very dynamic system in the rings. Astronomers are used to things taking millions or billions of years to change. We're seeing things change right before our eyes on the Cassini mission. So we're seeing clumps of particles grow into larger objects in spite of the tidal force from Saturn, which tries to rip them apart. And then we're seeing these things collide with each other or collide with other ring particles and produce these big splashes of dust and debris in the ring system. So it's a very changing dynamic system, I think much more so than we anticipated it would be. That's been a lot of fun to watch and understand what's going on in the system.
And knowing what you study in here in your lab, these microgravity experiments, that's
what we're looking at. We're looking at how do particles stick together to grow into larger objects and eventually become planets? What are the conditions necessary for it? And the data that we're getting from Cassini shows that even in an environment where we would expect objects can't stick together, they do sometimes. And this has been informing some of the experiments that we're doing in the lab and in our suborbital and space station experiments to try to see, okay, at Saturn, it looks like the ring particles are able to stick together when they shouldn't. What's going on there? Well, it's very cold. There's a lot of water ice. Water ice has some interesting properties that make it kind of sticky. So we're incorporating that into some of our experiments to see whether or not that can aid in the early stages of planet formation. One other thing that's not in the rings, but that I've been involved with our instrument that has been a very exciting moment is the discovery of the water geysers from Enceladus. Talk about an active system. This moon is geologically active. It's spewing water vapor and water ice crystals out of fissures in the South Pole. That has now shown us that there's a subsurface liquid water ocean on that moon. That's been a very exciting discovery made by Cassini.
And even if you don't have a background in physics or planetary science, the photographs that are coming back from Cassini over the course of its mission are just absolutely beautiful.
They are stunning. Yeah, stunning images. A tiny moon. It's not very big. It's like the size of Colorado or something like that. And spewing these water vapor and ice crystals into space, which then go on to make the E-ring. And it's really, really amazing.
So Cassini's been a part of your career as a planetary scientist since the start. Kind of reflect on what it's like knowing that this mission is going to come to an end.
My entire professional career, I've been working on Cassini. And even though we didn't get to Saturn until 2004, from 1990 until 2004, on a weekly, if not a daily basis, I've been involved in meetings to initially define the instrument, what the trajectory would be like, but then also planning all of the observations that would be made. And so there have been a lot of Really strong professional, personal connections that have been made, meeting with these people over the years and arguing for my observation over somebody else's observation or working out compromises and sharing in the thrill of discoveries that have been made. And that's going to be coming to an end. It's not just the spacecraft that's coming to an end, but it's those small professional networks, those groups that have been meeting on a regular basis over the course of the past 25 years to plan and analyze and discuss and get the most out of this mission. That's coming to an end, and that's going to be hard for us to deal with. I know I've been talking to my colleagues on the mission about the upcoming end, and it's a sad time. But it's also, we recognize that it's been a tremendous success, a great ride. It's exceeded everybody's expectations in terms of how well it's performed and how long it's lasted.
I mean, Cassini's a wildly successful mission. Have some of those best practices that scientists like yourself or engineers that you've worked with on this, have those best practices been translated to other spacecraft or future spacecraft that are in development?
One of the things that we're doing in this last year of the mission, actually, is trying to capture as well as we can what we did that worked, the lessons that we learned. So we're all being tasked with developing sort of lessons learned documents to help out future missions, and definitely NASA's paying attention to how things were done. One of the innovations of Cassini at the time was something called distributed operations, where although it's a very big, complicated mission, it's run from the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, lots of the individual planning of instrument activities and things like that were distributed out to the smaller teams of scientists around the country and around the world, in fact. And I think that worked out very well. There was a lot of growing pains, maybe, and a steep learning curve at the outset, but I think that's something that Cassini's contributed to how things are done in general now on these missions.
I mean, that's pretty much how all of these, you know, current missions are run. There's a major university that heads it.
Right. You sort of farm out a lot of the detailed work to the people that are actually on the front lines in the trenches dealing with the nitty-gritty of their instruments instead of having it all centralized at one main headquarters. And so that gets people who are more knowledgeable and familiar with the details of their work actually doing that work instead of having to work through intermediaries.
So, Josh, where are you looking in the solar system next? Is there a particular spacecraft that you're really excited about or a place in our solar system that you'd like to observe a little more?
Well, the spacecraft I'm most excited about right now actually is one that we're building here at the University of Central Florida. It's a CubeSat. That's a small spacecraft. It's going to go into low Earth orbit. We're looking at a launch at the end of next year. And that experiment will be looking at some of the kinds of things we were talking about with Saturn's rings, with understanding the collisions between particles in Saturn's rings, but also in the protoplanetary disk to understand how we get planet formation started. Once you get planet formation started, it kind of takes care of itself. Gravity puts everything together, but those first steps are difficult. So we're very excited to be building a spacecraft here. We're going to be operating it from UCF. So I'm very excited about that one. In the solar system as a whole, we're looking forward to the Europa mission, which is planned to study Jupiter's moon Europa, which is another potentially habitable world with a subsurface ocean. And I think it would be exciting to go back to Saturn and take a look at Titan and Enceladus up close, spend some time there. You could have a dirigible or a balloon or a glider cruising around through the clouds of Titan to explore that world, which would be really exciting.
Great. Well, Josh Caldwell, as always, thanks for speaking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was UCF professor and planetary scientist Josh Caldwell. Now, Josh has a podcast of his own with some of his colleagues over there at UCF. It's called Walk About the Galaxy. And if you're an astronomy buff, you have to listen to this podcast. So you can find it wherever you download your podcast, or you can visit the website and blog at walkaboutthegalaxy.com for more info. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Support for Are We There Yet comes from listeners of WMFE. Follow the show online. We're on Twitter at AWTYMars. Are We There Yet, Mars? Get it? Or reach out to me in the Twitterverse. I'm at SpaceBrendan. You can also send us an email with some ideas for future stories or possible guests you'd like to hear from. Email address is aretheyet@wmfe.org and leave us a review on iTunes. That's how more people learn about this podcast. Now, stay listening. Next week, we'll speak with the Planetary Society's Casey Dreyer. He's going to go ahead and preview the future of NASA and planetary science under a new administration when there's new changes coming along. You won't want to miss that episode. Are We There Yet is a production of WMFE. Our theme music was composed by Kevin McLeod. As always, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.